down on different things that people do. Have you been aware? You got brothers and sisters who care about what's gonna happen to you in a year from now. Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share the land that they'd be giving away when we all live together. I'm talking about together now. Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share the land that they'd be giving away when we all live together. I'm talking about together now.
And welcome to this edition of the Healthy Planet radio program. My name is Bob DiBenedetto, your host for the best hour of your life. That's right, the one that's always in front of you, right now. The Healthy Planet focuses on topics that will help to educate you about the deep connection among all life on Earth and the powerful effects your everyday choices can have on creating a clean, healthy, and compassionate world. And that is what all of us want. So I'm going to forego any kind of introduction today, since I have with us a guest who has a lot to say on some really interesting and important topics. Without further delay, I'll introduce him. His name is Ron Weiss, MD, and he is dual board certified in internal medicine and lifestyle medicine. He's a primary care physician in New Jersey and New York, who serves as Executive Director of Ethos Primary Care and as Assistant Professor of Clinical Medicine at Rutgers New Jersey Medical School. Dr. Weiss is not only a physician, but also a botanist and farmer, and he offers an evidence-based food as medicine approach to healing from chronic illness and optimizing wellness. He's been featured in top media, including the New York Times, the New York Post, the Today Show, New Jersey Monthly, and the feature-length documentary, Eating You Alive, that I would highly recommend. Dr. Weiss, thank you for joining us today on the Healthy Planet radio show.
Thank you so much for having me, Bob. It's a pleasure.
Great. You know, we've had many guests on this program who are MDs, and we've had some farmers, but this is the first time that we've had the pleasure of speaking to an MD who is a farmer. And while that might seem unusual at first to our listeners, I know that when you hear the reasons for combining these two fields and endeavors, it'll make all the sense in the world. So I applaud you doing so.
Thank you so much.
And I'm going to start out by asking you to paint us a picture of how and why that medicine-farm integration took place, including the wake-up call that you had that moved you away from practicing standard medicine, which is where you were aimed.
Well, I can give you a short answer and a long answer. I guess the short answer, in case we never get to the long answer to finish, is that food is medicine. That's what connects farming to medicine. And that's why I'm a doctor and a farmer. It is the most powerful medicine. The right food has the ability to reverse and prevent almost every illness known to mankind, to completely resurrect our healthcare system, which we spend about $3.7 trillion on in the United States. It's estimated that if we could reverse all of this chronic illness that we have that's food-driven, we could save trillions of dollars per year. That's the short answer. There's a deep and profound connection through farming and being a doctor through food. Where did this idea come from? Well, it is innate in many ancient cultures throughout the world. And in my physician's or medical background, it starts in my background, in the Western tradition, it starts with Hippocrates, whose dictum was food is a powerful medicine, or let food be thy medicine. So where I actually started from as a doctor was in academic medicine. And I was trained in Newark, New Jersey, at New Jersey Medical School. And I received a wonderful training there, but it is based as, and this was 35 years ago, it is still like almost all medical training today, it's based in the management of chronic disease, which is foodborne. But not not managing it with food, but managing it with very expensive pharmaceuticals, hospitalizations, and procedures and surgeries. And that's where we get into trouble. So that's what I learned to do. The beginning of change for me was when my father was diagnosed with end-stage pancreatic cancer and given, you know, about 90 days to live. And I happened to stumble across testimonies of cancer patients who had survived eating a diet of whole plant foods. Specifically at that time, it was a macrobiotic diet. And so because we were so desperate, we placed my father on that diet and it had an amazing effect on him. It reduced his cancerous tumors by about 50% in size over 6 months. Hmm. And he was under no other treatment. And so that was a startling revelation for me. I went on to do many things. I became an ER doctor. That was my first career as a physician for about 7 years. I was in a very busy ER and I worked night and day, and I would see in the emergency room all of the end products of our chronic disease, but in crisis state, all the heart attacks and the strokes and the rupturing aortas and the, you know, sepsis. And basically, I decided after doing that for about 6 or 7 years to try and go to the beginning of where this begins, which is prevention instead of emergency care. And that's when I set up a very comprehensive primary care multi-specialty practice in West New York, New Jersey, in Hudson County, right across the river from Midtown. And it was very successful, but I began successful in us helping people, but I began to realize again that there was a high burden of chronic illness, which unless we really designed a new food system to provide the medicines to people, it was not effectively being overcome. So that's when we decided to close that practice, and I took all the funds from that practice and bought a broken down old farm, which is a 300-year-old farm in Long Valley, New Jersey. We're located about an hour west of the Holland Tunnel, the Lincoln Tunnel, and the GW Bridge. We're the closest intact agricultural valley to New York City.
Wow.
So we decided to start afresh, and this time to build a healthy food system, which would give rise to a healthy healthcare system and community. So basically that's what happened.
You took matters into your own hands.
Yes, you could say that.
You not only said the food system needs to change, you said, I'm going to be part of that changing food system.
Yes.
But you were also already a botanist.
Yes. I've had an interest since I was a little boy in growing plants. And, you know, I at home, as I was growing up, I took care of the garden. I took care of all of our food we were growing. And then when I got to college, I was so fascinated by it, I decided to major in botany. So I do have a botany degree from Rutgers.
Perfect. So you call the project, the farm project, the Ethos Farm Project,
yes,
the world's first farm-based healthcare system.
Correct. I know that may seem a bit odd, maybe of a juxtaposition of terms, a farm-based healthcare system, but it goes back to that idea that food is our most powerful medicine. And farming in this country is not in a good way. 99% of all the food we eat in this country is grown conventionally. And when food is grown conventionally, it is destructive to the planet. It becomes, and to our health, it becomes like a mining operation for our planet, because you have to remember the way conventional agriculture works is basically you're planting crops in the ground and then removing the food, the harvest, but you're not putting back anything into the ground other than chemical inputs. So all the organic matter, all the living things that food give us, must be replaced back into the soil so the soil can continue to give us harvest. And because conventional agriculture does not do that, conventional agriculture relies on synthetic fertilizers to give nutrients to the plants to grow. And then all sorts of agrochemicals, or we like to call them biocides because they're killing agents, in order to kill insects, kill funguses, kill pests, kill weeds, the enemies of the plants. Because all this is going on, it becomes a toxic environment in the soil, in the air, in the water that goes through the land and then which people drink. And it comes down from the sky. So it's not a good situation. So when I say a farm-based healthcare system, it's not only a healthcare system for people, and you'll appreciate that because your program is a healthy planet, right?
Yep.
It's a healthcare system for the planet to bring to first to nurse our land back to health.
Yep. Well, you can't separate the two.
You cannot.
You can't. You can't separate human health from the health of the planet.
No, this is our mothership.
This is it. It's all we've got right now.
And, you know, I've been, in recent times, I think back to my ER days. You know, I began on this journey as a doctor trying to help people, you know, get them to clean up their arteries or, lower, you know, get off the diabetes medicines, get rid of the sugar, which we do with whole plant food diets. But when I think about my emergency room days, I was the only doctor in a very busy inner city ER. And in the middle of the night, oftentimes they would bring multiple catastrophes at the same time. They'd bring perhaps someone who'd stopped breathing, who was in respiratory arrest, someone who was having a heart attack, and maybe somebody who'd been stabbed or shot. And the question was, in that moment, I'm only one person, who do I pick to attend to? So there's a triage emergency. And, you know, I think about that in that triage emergency, and I'd have to pick the person who wasn't breathing and then send the nurses to maybe start working on those other two. I think we've come to the point where our triage emergency is no longer people's arteries. It's Mother Earth. And so I really believe the thrust of everything we have to do is develop that healthcare system for the planet. And it really most powerfully starts with feeding ourselves and the production of food. Because our planet is essentially, we're turning it into an industrialized food factory.
And we're paying the price for that.
We are paying the price for it. We've got to find more practical and more whole ways to grow food and to feed ourselves.
You say that the Ethos Farm Project is building a new food system model, which is predicated on and protective of the rights of nature. Explain that new food system and what you mean by the rights of nature.
Sure. So maybe about 7 years after we got started, we saw that the Rockefeller Foundation was holding a competition, and it was to envision a new food system which basically did not destroy the earth, which fed people healthy food, which provided food that was accessible to people, you know, without means, and to basically create a vision so that the earth's projected 10 billion people could survive by 2050 within planetary boundaries. So we decided to enter this competition because we thought that what we were doing here with the farm-based healthcare system was a solution. So we needed to select a geographic area for which to develop this system. And we picked the state of New Jersey because it had to be within the size of the area had to be within 100 square kilometers. And New Jersey fits that bill. So we are the Garden State. You know, during my childhood, we were the most productive agricultural state in the nation per acre, even outstripping California as far as produce.
That's quite something, yeah.
Yeah. So we decided to create this system and use the model as New Jersey to get it started. So we entered, And we decided there were a number of interesting things about our vision. Our vision is, first of all, that it is plant-based, that we feed people whole plant foods. And the second sort of unusual thing compared to our colleagues in the competition is that we abided by the rights of nature, that it was designed to honor the rights of nature. I'll get to that in a second. In any event, we entered the competition. There were 1,300 global applicants from six continents, and we were one of 78 chosen to go on to the semifinals. So we did not make the 10 finalists from around the world. One or two were chosen from each continent. However, the judges liked our vision so much, they encouraged us to keep working on it. And so we do that to this day to bring it forth.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. So you mentioned that it is predicated, this vision, on the rights of nature. What are the rights of nature? Well, that's a complicated question. There are many ways to look at it. The first perspective to look at it, or a lens to look through when considering the rights of nature, is that going back to this comment you made, which we are dependent on Mother Earth, right? For our survival, it is, as we said, the mothership. It's the only home we have. So in our current day, we are utilizing nature as a resource and all of its beings. Whether those beings are alive, or what we consider to be alive in our Western mindset, like living organisms, like an insect or a beetle or a bacteria or a human being or an elephant, or whether they are inanimate, a rock, a mountain, a flowing river. These are all beings, and they're all knit together in a natural universe. It is very important that we realize that we are all interdependent on one another. They're like bricks in a wall. We have some very old stone structures here. Our farm is a National Historic Landmark, and we have many old stone agricultural buildings that were built by settlers who came to this land. And they have many stones that were dragged out of the field. If you take one of these stones out of the wall may survive. If you take a few out, it will start to be undermined. The wall may fall down. And that's the way I look at each of these beings in our natural ecosystem. So human beings in our Western mindset, which kind of developed, I guess, maybe in the 1600s or 1700s in Europe, saw nature as a resource to provide to human beings so that we could take advantage of it and build ourselves. But as time has gone on and we've used all of these resources and our population continues to explode, we're reaching a crisis state because there are very few resources for us left. So it's important to understand that nature and its ecosystem has rights to exist. We cannot override those rights, because if we do, then we will cease to exist. And these rights of nature's supersede even the rights of human beings. We talk about human rights, right? Or civil rights or social rights. The rights of nature supersede this, because when nature is gone, we will have no human rights. The people who are at the bottom of civilization's rungs, they will be the first to perish because of the inequities of our society. So our food system is based on addressing and preserving these rights that nature should have.
And we benefit by doing so.
Not only do we benefit, it's necessary for us to survive.
Right.
If I can just give a little background how I first became aware of this, is
sure.
There's a theologian and a cultural historian by the name of Thomas Berry. And about maybe about 20 years ago, I became aware of him and his work through the oldest CSA in New Jersey, which was founded by a Dominican nun by the name of Sister Miriam, who championed this gentleman. And he came up with Thomas Berry came up with the idea of the earth's jurisprudence, that the earth has rights and all of its connected beings, and that they deserved and they should be recognized and protected. And that human beings, we tend to treat all of these beings as objects when they're really subjects. And I like what Thomas Berry said when he said it's just that the universe is not a collection of objects like we treat them now, but it's a communion of subjects, many different pieces that have interrelations to one another. And if you look at the news, Chile, I believe this past week, tried to pass a new constitution that incorporates the recognition of the rights of nature into their new governing document. And a lot of that is based on Thomas Berry's work.
That's fantastic. We've been doing this work for several decades, and I think our initial focus was more on human health. And in recent years, I have been feeling the need of the triage to address planetary health. And so our work has been moving more in that direction because of the dire state that we're in. I mean, we have to take all the actions possible right now. And I think for people who don't understand that, who don't see what's coming with climate change, they probably are not paying attention or are maybe so set in the perspective that it's objects out there instead of subjects that they're not seeing.
Exactly.
That something with these wildfires, the decades-long droughts,
exactly,
and the weird storms and the water drying up and
exactly,
the flooding and the water shortages and all that, they're not seeing that that is actually happening and understanding that we are connected to that and related to the cause and, well, impacted by the effects.
Absolutely. And you know, if you just take a look at the news in the past week or two, two massive flooding events, which are they're acute emergencies, right? One was in Jackson, Mississippi, where 150,000 people all of a sudden have no drinkable water.
No water. And
then you have Pakistan, where tens of millions of people have been displaced. I heard that the official from Pakistan was saying that it's the greatest displacement of people since Pakistan was partitioned from India, which was a huge humanitarian crisis, right?
One-third of the country underwater.
Out of the blue, all of a sudden, these have become health crises, right? It's no longer like I'm a doctor in the emergency room treating a guy who comes in with chest pain or angina who's having a heart attack. Now a doctor is going to have to be called because there are hundreds of thousands or millions of people potentially exposed to cholera or dysentery or, you know, waterborne or foodborne diseases. We have to, I think, refocus our attention on whose health we should be paying attention to. But we can address both of them at the same time. And that's the amazing thing. That's what Ethos Farm Project can do. We can address planetary health and we can make our own human selves and our bodies healthier at the same time.
And much the same way as it's cheaper, let's talk about cost for a moment, it's cheaper to address a health condition before it's happening than it is to go in and start doing all kinds of extreme medical measures to address what has happened as a result of our neglect. It's also cheaper to address what we're experiencing with our environment. We say, oh, we can't spend billions of dollars on climate. Well, you're going to spend trillions upon trillions of dollars on climate if you do not act now. There's no comparison. The cost benefit is so extreme in favor of taking early action. And yet it's still, you have a whole political party who will not recognize that it even exists.
I agree. I think that there's, and science backs this up. The climate scientists know this.
Absolutely.
I think there's no end in sight to what the potential costs of climate destruction can be.
No end in sight.
When nobody knows how much more methane and CO2 will be liberated from all the frozen grounds in the north being defrosted and without gassing into the air. No one exactly knows how much the seas will rise when all of the polar ice caps have melted. We don't know. We don't know. So as Ben Franklin said, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that
exactly.
occurs, I agree with you, both to human health and to our current situation. We have to get together and help both situations.
I'll just mention in the realm of current events, there's something called the Thwaites Glacier, and it's approximately the size of Florida. And scientific research just came out this past week that said what they call the Doomsday Glacier is retreating. It's collapsing. And they say, and I quote again, that the potential impact of this is spine chilling. And they say that if the iceberg, which is holding on by its fingernails, that they say that too, were to break off, that it could raise sea levels up to 10 feet. And they're saying that that could happen in years, not centuries. So we are really facing a challenge. And with that in mind, despite the fact that we've discussed it many times on this show, most don't know about the Lancet Commission report. And this is right in line with the work that you're doing, which is addressing both of human health, putting it together with planetary health. Describe that Lancet Commission report and the food system that it explains, that it talks about, that is needed.
Well, I'm very familiar with the Lancet Commission report because Dr. Walter Willett, who is a professor at Harvard Medical School, School of Public Health, is the lead author on that of that commission and of the recommendations and report. And he is on our advisory board here at Ethos Farm Project and was one of the contributors to the Rockefeller Foundation 2050 Food System Vision Project. So what the Lancet Commission report is it is a collaboration and a convening of, I believe it was almost 40 of the world's most very prominent scientists in all kinds of areas, in areas that are relevant to food systems. And basically, the scientists convened and came out, I believe it was in 2019 or 2020, presented this recommendation, this report. It was printed through The Lancet, which is one of the leading medical journals of the world. And why a medical journal? Well, it starts to tell you that even The Lancet, which has been around since the 19th century, it's one of the oldest medical journals, understands that there's a deep, profound connection from that are going from these recommendations to human health. So basically, the challenge of the commission was to make recommendations, so as I said, that a projected 10 billion people that are thought will inhabit the Earth by 2050 will be able to survive, feed themselves, and do all of that within planetary boundaries. In other words, respecting the rights of nature. So respecting natural systems, not using, abusing them or utilizing them or spending them as resources beyond their means, which is what we are doing now. So the key takeaway from this report is they recommended that the world adopt a plant-based diet. And that was really the only way that we can achieve this by 2050. So this, it was so nice because on separate tracks, what we had been doing since 2012, when we got the farm and started to build this plant-based vision with regenerative thinking and agricultural techniques and delivering plants to human health and reversing illness and preventing, basically it aligns with the report, which came out 7 years later. So that's what the Lancet Commission report is.
It is so important.
So important. And I believe the UN has adopted its principles and is promoting them as a way to get the planet to a stable place 30 years from now.
And you have someone like Walter Willett putting his name behind it.
Yes.
It's not something you would think by virtue of them saying that we need to stop eating all these animals. You would think that it was put out by PETA or the Humane Society. But no, this is like some of the top minds in the environment and medical care and understanding that we are living in a system and the system cannot keep up.
It is, yeah. I think it's important to remind our listeners also that there are, you know, climate change is just one threat that that we face as far as planetary upheaval. People will say that there are other threats which are even more dire than that. And when I think about that, if I think about one threat to our planet's health that is even more worrisome than climate change and more immediate, it is the loss of biodiversity. And the extinction rates that thousands of species will face over the coming years and decades. And a lot of that is due, the largest piece of that is due to the way we farm and produce our food.
And specifically, the raising of animals as food.
Yes,
and that's both on the land and in the sea.
Yes. In order to feed ourselves all of these animal products, you know, the rainforests are being chopped down to create grazing land. That's an enormous loss of biodiversity in some of the richest places on Earth of species, some we haven't even discovered yet. Our number one agricultural crop in the United States, one and two, are corn and soybean. It's the number one thing we grow. The vast majority of it is not even for direct human consumption. We can't even eat it. It's not food. It's grown mostly to feed animals. And some of it is used to produce industrial chemicals like corn syrup that go into processed foods or ethanol. But, you know, we have this vast midsection of our country, not only our country, but Canada as well, which were grasslands. Grasslands were very rich carbon sinks. They, for millennia, they sucked out carbon from the atmosphere and buried in soil through the grassland ecosystem, through the prairie grasses. And this has been all carved up. This system no longer exists. All the insects and the butterflies and all of these, the wildlife that were within this system has no more home because it's all millions of acres of monocropped, genetically modified plants, one plant, which covers millions of acres, which is sprayed with all kinds of chemicals and chemical fertilizers. So if you think about it, I know those are not directly animals that are being grown there, but that is the food for the animals that are now in warehouses. So it is directly tied to animal. A lot of these disruptions through farming of biodiversity loss is connected to growing crops to support animal agriculture.
Right. And in a world where we are currently really afraid of a world food shortage, it's happening. I have yet to hear on any kind of mainstream news the fact that most of our agriculture on the globe is raising food for animals. And that when we do that, we waste 90% of that food. So if we were just to cut back on that, there would be no food shortage. And yet I have not, again, heard it mentioned as a solution, whereas it is really the primary solution since we have no need for those foods any longer. And not only that, but with people like you, it's showing that we can actually create healing by getting off of those foods.
We can. And, you know, I just want to put in a little plug right here. That's why on September 24th and 25th, we're having an Ethos Farm Days
Good, yes.
event. It's an amazing event because it is one of our missions is public education. We want to educate people about what you're saying so that they can understand. There's an enormous amount of hope out there. I know what we've been saying is very dark and overwhelming, but this event is just brimming with optimism and hope and possibility. All that possibility lies in eating plants, respecting the rights of nature, growing those plants well, without harming the earth. And, you know, I want to invite everybody in the audience to come to this beautiful festival. It's September 24th and 25th. You will hear world-renowned leaders in the movement giving us ideas and discussing at more length what we can do.
You're talking about T. Colin Campbell, Furman. Dr. Joel Furman, Dr. Michael Clapper, Salish Rao, who have been on this show, and Gene Bauer.
Gene Bauer, yes.
From a different perspective.
Yes. And we'll have wonderful plant-based food and movement activities, and you'll get to see really the basis of what we're doing here. We'll take you into the fields. We'll show you how to grow vegetables and fruits. In grains in a way that respects the rights of nature. We give you tours of how we're restoring the land. Our valley was a rare eastern prairie. It was like Nebraska, which is very unusual in the east, you know, because the east is wooded, except for our valley. And this was for, you know, under the care of the Lenape, who were the native people in our New Jersey for, you know, about 10,000 years or so. So we're restoring a large part of the farm to those grasses, which can suck all that carbon out of the air and put it back into the soil and restore it. So you'll get to see all these beautiful things. It'll be very inspirational. I can direct you to the website. It's ethosfarmproject.org. That's ethosfarmproject.org. And if you do that, you'll see there's a link to get tickets, which I think are very reasonably priced, to the event.
Okay, great. That's ethosfarmproject.org.
Yeah. If I were an optimist, I wouldn't be here because I do see a future in this. I think we just have to gather the troops and get everyone along. So just to give you something that's hopeful, we talked about loss of diversity of species, right? Because all these natural ecosystems and environments have been turned over into food, industrialized food production. It's estimated that if we were to replace the protein source of beef in the United States for consumers, if we were to give them beans instead of beef, I'm not talking about chicken, I'm not talking about fish, pork, anything, just replacing the protein sources of beef with beans, we would become so agriculturally efficient as far as space that we would be able to free up a land mass that could be rewilded the size of California, Nevada, and Arizona combined. Think about that. Think about what that could do to support disappearing species.
Yep, it's limitless, the benefit it can have. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet Radio Show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We're talking to Ron Weiss, MD, who is dual board certified in internal medicine and lifestyle medicine. He's also the founder of Ethos Primary Care in Long Valley, New Jersey, and the Ethos Farm Project, also in Long Valley, New Jersey, a 342-acre farm. You can find out more about Dr. Weiss at www.ethosprimarycare.com. That's ethosprimarycare.com and ethosfarmproject.org. www.ethosfarmproject.org. Let's talk a little bit more about the Ethos Primary Care. Your website states that you help patients to trade their prescriptions for plants, reverse and prevent disease and illness, and live a more energized, fulfilled life through a mindful, whole foods, plant-based lifestyle. So describe how a visit with one of your patients would be different from a visit with the primary care physician that many people would go to now?
Sure. Well, to start with, before the visit even begins, we collect a large amount of information from the patient regarding their lifestyle and their behaviors, exactly what they're eating. Like, we like to have a food diary, which is submitted before I even see them. We review all this material, any previous records that they've had. So we go through detailed surveys about how they sleep, what kinds of exercise they're having. So we go through all these behaviors, and then we base our inquiries during the visit off of that. That has a strong influence on the visit.
Makes sense.
Patients will come in, and all of our visits for our regular visits are 50 minutes in length for our regular patients who come here. And we think that, you know, it's important to do that, because you can't find out about what's going on in a patient's life until you actually sit there and talk with them. So we need that time, and that time is sacred to us. And then basically we find out in a detailed way the histories of if you do have any medical problems. Let's say if you have diabetes or hypertension or whatever it is, a cancer diagnosis, we find out from the beginning in detailed manner the nature of your story. We investigate or want to know about the causes of these illnesses, like where did they come from? And so we go even back to childhood to find out basically what the origin of these problems are. And then what we also do, which I believe is unique, is we develop a care plan during the visit. I have assistants who do this because I like to pay attention to the patient. You know, these days, everything is automated with electronic medical systems, and doctors are often typing, but I like to face the patient, look at them in the eyes, and look at them for an hour. I'm sorry, patients, you have to look at me, but I like to look at you. And, you know, of course, I do a physical exam on patients, but the care plan is a living document where we give you all kinds of goodies, things that you can educate yourself on. Let's say if you have anxiety or depression, new ideas for you, or what the evidence is for how you can benefit from adopting lifestyle change and how that can help you. And we put all these things into this care plan, which is, it's a lot of homework to do, but not like boring drudgery homework like you did in high school. It's elevating, and it gets the patient really engaged and helps them to shift their ideas and their interests. So they begin to understand that this stuff really works and that they can do it themselves. And then we also give them a prescription to get amazing cutting edge blood tests. These blood tests are, we send our patients to LabCorp, which is a national lab. And they basically, I think they're amazing because they basically look into dark corners, you know, invisible areas which generally patients don't see, areas that are hiding in inflammatory responses. And from investigating the blood in this way, we can actually predict the future of patients. What is your chance of getting heart attacks and strokes? What is your chance of getting Alzheimer's? What is your chance of getting diabetes? So it's really a wonderful in-depth evaluation. And then we usually like to have the patients come back and I go over all of these elements, tie them together, and then get them into a path to move forward.
And obviously a big part of what makes your practice different is not just the emphasis on whole foods, plant-based diet, but the availability of support.
Yes. And that whole food plant-based diet is just one pillar of a system. That system is called lifestyle medicine. So you, in the beginning, you said I'm board certified in that.
Yes.
So lifestyle medicine is the newest kind of doctor in town. It's a specialty, just like you'd go if you have a rash, a skin doctor, an orthopedist or a gynecologist. A lifestyle medicine doctor is a specialist. And what we do is we choose or prioritize the treatment of patients preventing their illnesses and reversing them and taking them away by working with the patient's habits, their living habits and behaviors, not by giving them pills, because the pills don't affect the habits. The habits are the cause of the illness. That central habit, food is medicine, it's food. Food is a big cause of illness, like we talked about. But there are other contributors, right? Sedentary living is one. That's a second pillar. So it's exercise. A disrupted or dysfunctional sleep. The realm of sleep is very, very important. You can eat all the plants you want in the world, but if you're not sleeping correctly, you could end up with Alzheimer's or memory loss at the end of your life. So sleep is, and many other diseases, sleep is another pillar. Yet another pillar is social connection. Human beings only thrive when we are socially connected to family, friends, community. That's a pillar that we investigate. Very important, stress reduction. Emotions and stress reduction and how we can be calm, less anxious, not depressed. That's another pillar. Yet another pillar is the avoidance of and staying away from things that can harm us and are dangerous to us, substances, whether they be drugs, heavy metals, radon in your basement, smoking cigarettes, things like that. And then the last pillar, which is the most important to us, is connection to the natural world. Hmm. Making sure we have a deep connection, whether it's through living soils or sunshine that comes through us from the sky to make vitamin D and make our bones strong and our immune system strong, or breathing air that's you know, healthy for us and doesn't make us sick. Hmm. So those are the elements of what we deal with. We treat every patient in every one of those sectors and we evaluate them. And when you put them all together, there's nothing else that creates human health other than those things. It's comprehensive.
And what results do you get from seeing patients who have some of these chronic diseases compared to what a primary medical doctor around the block from most of us would achieve?
So, you know, in my past, I've practiced conventional medicine. That's what I was trained in. It's basically a situation of chronic disease management. So people are coming into you, they have their diseases, they're obese and diabetic, and you know, heart disease, cancer, whatever, and you're just giving them pills for basically to sustain them in their illnesses. The illnesses never end, and you're really not preventing anything. You know, you could say, okay, well, I'm a conventional doctor. I'm sending people, women for a mammogram. I'm preventing breast cancer. Not really. You're not preventing. You're just trying to find it early. Or I'm sending them for colonoscopies, right, to prevent, you know, colon cancer, which is a major cancer. You're not preventing it. You're just trying to find it early. In some cases, prevent it if you can find a polyp and remove it, but that gets complicated. But true prevention deals with what I just described to you. And so we do both of those things, and it's a delightful thing for me to do, because I didn't want to become a doctor to become a disease manager. I wanted to become a doctor when I applied to medical school because I wanted to be a healer. I wanted to help people and make them feel better and remove their diseases. And that's what lifestyle medicine does. We have every day, we see diabetics who get rid of their diabetes and get off their drugs. Hypertensives, bye-bye high blood pressure pills. Cholesterol pills, bye-bye. You know, cleaning out your arteries, reversing rheumatoid arthritis and multiple sclerosis and autoimmune diseases. These things that I were taught in medical school, you just can't do anything about other than give them serious drugs. I found that not to be true.
That's very powerful and very different. So most people who are going to think about going to a doctor, would they choose managing the disease or condition that they have, which will eventually end up in a bad place because they progress? Or would they choose to address the cause? And your addressing the cause actually has an impact, not only just on managing it again, but in potentially reversing the condition.
It does. But you know what the best part of that is? Instead of, look, I know the average life expectancy is 78 plus or minus years, and it's falling, by the way, because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And it's expected that our children will be living less, that children born in years that are coming up will have less of a life expectancy because of chronic disease. But I think that if you look at elderly people, sure, you'll see a lot of people living beyond 78. You'll see people, I see people in their 80s. I see people in 90s. You can walk into nursing homes, they're filled with these people. But is that the way you want to spend the last quarter of your life? With someone taking care of you, with a feeding tube in you, in pain all the time? The wonderful thing that lifestyle medicine does, and most powerfully the right food, is that it doesn't just give you a longer life, it gives you a healthy and productive life to the very end. So that you can really do what you want to after working so hard for the first portion of your life, you can have a wonderful time in the latter part of your life. And if that means being a doctor every day and seeing patients until they have to cart me out, that's what it'll be. Life is in your control.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And with parents who live with me who are 97 and 92, it is important. You don't stop being interested in life or wanting to have a fulfilling life as you get older. That's what we used to think when we were kids. Once you're older, it doesn't matter. It matters.
It matters a lot.
Dr. Weiss, any final thoughts you'd like to leave our audience with?
Yeah, a few.
You've got a couple of minutes.
Yeah, you know, I already told you about the farm days. Please come. It's an amazing and very inspirational experience. And you can find out about this world of getting healthy and making our planet healthy. If there is anyone who is interested, I know that this audience is basically in Long Island, but we will be opening up an office in New York. You know, Long Valley is about an hour from Manhattan, as I said, but we do have plans to open up an office in New York, and which is, you know, pretty accessible to Long Island.
And also telehealth.
Yes, we are licensed in New York and New Jersey. We do have telehealth, which is basically an effective way of taking care of people over the, you know, internet. And it's really, we have a really good system for doing that. Our patient care model is patient-centric. So we really take care of our patients. They get very good customer service. I'm on call 365 days a year, 24 hours a day.
Holy.
A primary care doctor is always there. If our patients get bitten by a tick at 5 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, they call me. I'm always here. So it's service to the patient that we give. And we are available if anyone is interested in finding out about Ethos Primary Care and what lifestyle medicine is about. I'll give you our nurse practitioner's email. You can email her directly. It's D as in Denise Bitz, B as in boy, I-T-Z as in zebra. That's D Bitz at ethosprimarycare.com. And you can email her and she'll be more than glad to respond. Let me give you some other resources where you can maybe start doing a little investigation on your own and get excited about this world. You know, when people come to us and they don't really know anything about it, I tell them you're standing like at the edge of the Grand Canyon, this profound world of so much riches and a depth of knowledge and evidence. So let me give you a couple of little resources you can check out.
You've got about 30 seconds.
Yeah. One of them is there is a wonderful book, which is called How Not to Die by Michael Greger. It's an evidence-based book, a New York Times bestseller. Check that out. Another cookbook, if you just want to start making some recipes, get the Forks Over Knives cookbook. It's about $12 or so on Amazon. You can just start eating plants. And listen, I'm not saying to give up steak today. You don't have to do that. Just eat more plants if it's too hard for you. And you can use the cookbook to get started on that.
All right. Well, Dr. Weiss, thank you so much for joining us on the Healthy Planet radio show. And we will definitely be watching what you're doing. It's very interesting. And the integrative approach that you're taking with both medicine and the environment and farming is something like I've never seen before. So thank you for all the work and the thought you've put into this.
Thank you, Bob. It's an honor to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
All right. This is Bob DiBenedetto on the Healthy Planet radio show on WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook. We've been talking to Ron Weiss, MD, who is dual board certified in internal medicine and lifestyle medicine. He's a primary care physician in New Jersey and New York and a farmer. That's right, a farmer and the founder of Ethos Primary Care in Long Valley, New Jersey, and the Ethos Farm Project, which is a 342-acre organic restorative farm in New Jersey. And you can find out more about Dr. Ron Weiss at www.ethosprimarycare.com. That's ethosprimarycare.com. And you can find out more about the Ethos Farm Project at www.ethosfarmproject.org. That's ethosfarmproject.org. And they're having their event, which you'll hear a little bit more about in a moment. And that's the Farm Days that are on September 24th to 25th with great speakers, the caliber of which you would hear on this program, teaching you about how our diets not only affect our health, but the health of our planet and our connection with animals and nature. There'll be tours of the farm, plant-based food options, and movement activities throughout the day as well. So September 24th and September 25th, Long Valley, New Jersey. Again, you can find all information about this event at ethosfarmproject.org. That's ethosfarmproject.org. And I'll be with you again this same time on Friday, October 7th at 6 p.m. and every month thereafter at 6 p.m. on the first two Fridays of the month. And when I'm not here, be sure to listen to the Natural Alternatives lineup with great hosts from Eugene Zamperone to Jennifer Green to Courtney Bozick to John Scardina, sharing cutting-edge information on health, our environment, and much more. That's every week, Fridays at 6 p.m. For more information on Healthy Planet on our radio shows, and visit our website at www.healthyplanetusa.org. And like our Facebook page, which is at Healthy Planet USA. Until next time, stay strong, relax, make your voice heard in this world by continuing to speak up for what's right. Take an action to make your life more sustainable. Be kind to those around you, including our amazing four or multi-legged friends. And finally, remember to enjoy each moment of existence on this beautiful planet. Good night.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ron Weiss. I'm a medical doctor, farmer, and the founder of a nonprofit, Ethos Farm Project. Ethos's mission is to address the interconnected nature of how agriculture impacts human and planetary health and our relationship with animals. We grow regenerative organic food to feed our community, restore the land, and raise a new generation of farmers, doctors, and nurses. Please join me on September 24th and 25th at our beautiful 342-acre National Historic Landmark Farm in Long Valley, New Jersey. You'll be inspired by world-renowned speakers, amazing activities, and delicious plant-based food right here on the farm. Go to www.ethosfarmproject.org or call 631-599-6138. Thank you. See you all down on the farm.
Our climate is changing. Making a few changes to your driving habits can cut tailpipe emissions and improve fuel efficiency. Drive smart. Go easy on the brakes and gas pedal. Get regular tune-ups by following your vehicle's maintenance schedule. Check your tire pressure. Combine as many activities and errands into one trip as possible. Reduce your carbon impact to the environment. Act now on climate change.